Hi, it's Veronica Dagger, the host of the Wall Street Journal's Secrets of Wealthy Women, the podcast where women share how they tackle career, money, and the world. This week, we'll talk with Mara Lighty and Naomi Hirabayashi, the co-founders and co-CEOs of Shine, a self-care app that sends daily motivational texts and audio affirmations to its users.
In your toughest times, when you may think you won't ever get through it, that you're not very resilient, you have more strength than you think.
Mara and Naomi started out as co-workers, not co-founders. As two young women of color, they have beaten the odds in the tech world, raising more than $8 million in funding. How did they do it? Stick around. Ladies, you are both working at a nonprofit, DoSomething.org, that gets young people involved in social change. Naomi, you were the chief marketing officer, and Mara, you were the director of mobile product. When did you actually become closer? Mara, we'll start with you.
So we met working together 8 years ago. We were at a really pinnacle point, I would say, in our careers, and that we both were managing large teams, kind of coming into our own as leaders in an organization. We spent a lot of our time there thinking about how do we scale out social change in a way that is intimate and also impactful. And maybe not surprisingly now, but I would certainly say 8 years ago, what we found was that text messaging had a 98% open rate, and we found it was 40 times more effective than email in getting a young person to volunteer. So long story short, we ended up building an entire strategy and team around messaging young people and texting them about these different social causes. One of the impacts of that is they would text us back, right? Not surprisingly, they would say, hey, I'm really struggling right now. I'm feeling anxious before school starts. I'm thinking of coming out to my parents. Do you have any advice? And this idea of what we now think of as mass intimacy or really creating a one-on-one relationship with someone at scale was really powerful. And on the flip side, we really enjoyed working together. We actually roomed together during our first staff retreat and, told each other our life stories over wine. It was a very beautiful experience. And I think what we ultimately built out was this incredible kind of symbiotic relationship with each other at work that ultimately led to the creation of Shine.
So you're in this room, you're on this retreat together, you're talking, getting to know each other. How did you know you could trust each other?
It's a good question. I would say I didn't trust Naomi at first. She knows this. Part of the reason why is because Naomi was so positive. She wasn't positive in any kind of like light or fluffy way, but she was someone at work. She was this chief marketing officer, had a very serious big title and was married. And, I was in my early 20s. I was like, whoa, you're 30. What is that like? And this woman was just like crushing it. She was the woman that everybody wanted to have in a brainstorm, but also to take hard challenges to. The woman that people wanted to do coffee with when they were struggling at work. She was just kind of this uplifting force at the organization. And so it's not that I didn't trust her as a person, but in terms of my assumptions, I don't think I had realized it until we had this conversation that fateful night at staff retreat. But I very much assumed that because she was so happy and positive, that her life must have been really easy. And so it was a really great opportunity for me to question my own assumptions. And I think she ended up sharing first, and that kind of opened my mind up, and I think created a safe space for me to also feel like there was some nuance in being somebody who has struggled and also somebody who can be positive and uplifting and to make real change.
Naomi, how did you know you could share your story with her?
She was just someone that was very curious, you could tell, and really smart. Mara and I just started talking about where we come from and the environments that we grew up in and what brought us to Do Something. I mean, Do Something is a place that's trying to create a more, civic-minded social action generation. And so that naturally attracts people that there's usually a story. There's usually a story to why you're there and why you're trying to enact change. And that wasn't the lens I think that we started with at that night, but it was just kind of digging in. And it's funny, 8 years later, we just went out the other night and caught up as not just as co-founders, but just as friends. And we're catching up on the things that matter in life, like what's going on in your relationship? You know, how's your family doing? What are you stressed about? And it's that same level of connection that, you know, started in that hotel room and has permeated in terms of what we're trying to build with Shine, which is really this community for all of us where people feel less alone in what they're going through.
Mara, at what point did you know that this was a business idea?
I think for us, we very much felt that we were passionate about a specific problem, and that problem was this idea of feeling less alone in what you were going through and having a support system, right? And so when we asked our friends, well, where do you go now? How do you check in with your emotional health now? We heard things like, I Google it. That was definitely the number one response. Mm-hmm. Shine started out as a messaging experience called the Shine Text. And from that prototype and getting 50 people for a month getting a daily text from us, we immediately heard overwhelming feedback that this was changing their lives. The first text we got was, I can't believe how different I feel every morning after a week of getting your texts. And so that for us said, we're onto something. There's absolutely something here. And then it took us a couple of months to get the confidence to, you know, quit the job and raise the money.
How did you know this was a business and not a nonprofit?
We recently just updated what we are calling our operating pledge, which speaks to how we think about being stewards of capital and how we use our funds. For Shine, when we said, how do we think about mission and purpose and dollars? First and foremost, we are here to build a massive company and a massive business because we think that's what's going to change the world. We believe that the nonprofit system in America is fundamentally challenged. And again, that the dollars that are coming to fund nonprofits are coming from people who have built really successful companies, right?
Yep.
And those people don't look like us, right? So we need more people that look like us to be able to give the dollars that we're making back into our communities. Shine over indexes for marginalized communities. We're 40% non-white. 57% of our users don't have a full-time job, right? Like we over index for lower socioeconomic statuses. All of that is the direct result of putting people like Naomi and I in positions of power and having the funding to do the work that we're doing. And so we think that the impact that we can make in this idea of the stakeholder theory and kind of our operating pledge is about what we do with our dollars. First and foremost, it goes back to our investors. We are here for to serve the wider community we're a part of. Secondly, it goes to our own community, meaning our users and our team. And third, it goes back to the wider mental health community. And that's what we believe being responsible stewards of capital looks like in this era.
Coming up, Mara and Naomi tell us how they launched their business as a side hustle and talk about the difficulty of raising venture capital as women of color.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Plus, save time by completing security questionnaires with Vanta AI. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ. That's VANTA.com/WSJ.
I want to shift back to your starting the business a bit. How did you find the time to do this while working your day job? You said it was a side hustle at first. So how did you manage that balance?
We got creative. Our product is still to this day a daily product. So the Daily Shine, we almost think of it as this daily secular sermon where we have millions of people every day who are coming together to engage with our content around a different self-care theme every day. So today's Shine Text is around realistically accomplishing things, right? We start the day with these insane to-do lists and then often can feel drained and exhausted at the end of the day when we didn't get through them. So it's typically written in the form of an affirmation. So mine says, you can do anything, Mara, but you can't do everything at once. Create a stress list today to help you cope with the pressure. And then if you dig in a little bit more, it tells you that the definition of stress is when it feels like the demands placed on you, like work or school, relationships, exceed your ability to cope, which is so helpful because I think for our users, a lot of what we do is we give them language. We say it's not, we all know we're stressed. We all know we're anxious, but what is stress and how can I manage it? So when we started, we would send the text at, I think, 7:30 in the morning. So we would get up at 6:30. We usually would meet. Shout out to LPQ in yes. Union Square. We would meet there and have basically a working session in the morning when we could cut out for lunch for a working session then. And then similarly after work, which was great because it involved wine usually. but I think the hardest part was not the side hustle piece. It was the side hustle piece plus the raising money. So we actually raised around almost $1 million on the side, and it was our first time ever raising venture capital. So we very much learned a lot about ourselves through that process. We did everything from taking investor phone calls and ATM banks. We got our first term sheet and we ran downstairs from the Do Something office. There was an envelope store downstairs and it was the only place we could go. It was freezing cold outside. And we went in and got a call from the investor and, you know, we're crying in the envelope store.
I still wonder what their impression is of us. Very passionate about envelopes.
We bought some magnets with like a cheesy quote on it that day. Like, this is our time. But we very much got creative. And I think, obviously, you know so much about resilience. But I think for us, our whole story and the reason we bonded was because of our resilience. It was because of talking about the hard things that we went through, right? Certainly our goals and the, you know, things that we wanted to do in our life, but so much connected to what are the things that we've struggled with or what are the things we're struggling with now. And so I think that, you know, for me, it wasn't until I really entered the corporate workforce that I knew that I recognized what a differentiator that was to have built that resilience throughout my childhood, to see that I use my stress and anxiety to fuel me. I didn't get flustered as easy. I took criticism and I took that as like an opportunity to take ownership.
How did you know you were financially ready to make the leap and go full time with Shine?
We didn't know we were financially ready. And I think that's an important distinction because one of the things that we struggled with because of our background was a lot of the narratives around starting a company, right? Like, I slept on my friend's couch for a year and I didn't pay myself. And everybody is coming to this journey, the entrepreneurship journey, with a set of experiences and privilege or lack of privilege. But it was confusing for us because we certainly have a lot of privilege in that we had a network that we could kind of tap into to get some of these intros and learn more about the VC space, amazing supportive partners, each other. But we had credit card debt. We didn't have any savings. And the whole like friends and family round, we were so confused by that. For context, everyone talks about usually a first round of a startup is you raise from your friends and families, right. And I'm doing air quotes right now. And what that means is wealthy people that you know. Yeah. And we were like, who are these people talking about?
What uncle is that?
Yeah, what uncle? What
get that uncle?
What holiday have I been missing? And so that is one of many gates that you run into, particularly from different backgrounds coming into the space, that makes you feel like you're not supposed to do this. Mm. It's like, you don't have your friends and family network. And so much of this space, but particularly the beginning, is fight or flight. You know, everything in your body is telling you that this is a very risky thing to do. Mm-hmm. And you add on different sets of experiences, being women, being younger, being women of color. There's just, it's harder. You have less room to fail. And you have less examples of that success. And so I think for us, I'm really proud that we had tough conversations with each other where we said, we're not in a financial situation where there's a nest that we can fall back on. We haven't been in a situation where we've been able to save up, 12 months of rent or anything like that. But what we do know, to Mara's point, is that we're resourceful. We'll like work that side job. We'll waitress. We'll freelance. We'll babysit. We'll do whatever we need to do to float ourselves. If we are not able to raise this money to build this business, we will figure it out. And I think that is so important because the only way that more people like us push through that hardest first stage of really challenging the narrative, is this for me or is this not for me? Can I do this or can I not do this? Is recognizing that those experiences that have built resilience are what will allow you to fight through and figure out how to make it work.
I want to talk a little bit more about venture capital funding, right? Because two of you essentially beat the odds, because there's studies that show that women of color get less than 1% of venture capital funding. So I'm just wondering, how did you break through?
Getting through the first door is the hardest. And I think hands down, it was our passion for what we were building. Mm-hmm. Then the fact that we had scaled, do something to over 5 million members, and we had this deep expertise across messaging and marketing for how you reach people around something meaningful that they care about, particularly in a friend format through messaging, was really important. So that experience mattered. But most importantly, I think it was the passion that we had around how frustrated we were with the problem, in that the well-being industry was way too bougie. It was marketed as a lifestyle that came with a certain disposable income, and it was overlooking everyday people dealing with everyday issues that absolutely needed support because of the daily struggle.
Those are the kind of prereqs to get to the door, to your point. And then I think where we had some privilege and some opportunity was our network. So we got creative about our network. We didn't know a lot of investors. We didn't know founders, really. Yeah. But what we did know is people who knew people. To the founders or future founders out there that are thinking about this, the grit, the hustle, the resilience, the passion, those are all prerequisites. And I think as much as you can get creative about your network, I think that's you know, kind of the part that has to be unlocked for you to get to that next stage.
So you have tapped into a niche demographic, and within about 3 years, you have 4 million users. What is the health and wellness community not understanding about this group that you guys understand?
So we started Shine in 2016. A lot of things happened specifically in America in 2016. Obviously, it was a very intense social and political time for us. But we found that American well-being was on the decline for the first time after a three-year upward trend. You also saw the rise in the search term, which now is this, you know, great buzzword we all use called self-care. But then it was actually the most searched self-care had ever been in history. And so around the time that we started the company, we found that people in our community were seeking more intimacy, more vulnerability, more authenticity. But we very much have started with millennials kind of as our core. And I think that the time in which we started the company was so, so pivotal in this space. And so we found that as a generation, we very much are demanding solutions that are accessible, that are communal, that are habitual, and most importantly, preventative.
What do you say to people who question your qualifications to have a business that's focused on mental health, given the fact that neither of you are therapists?
That is exactly why we are successful, right? So when we started Shine, you kind of had a rise in some of these more clinical solutions, which we think are really important, right? And they're certainly solving an issue for a certain demographic. However, so many people were saying, I'm just struggling day to day, right? I might not have depression. I might not have a clinically diagnosed mental health disorder, but I'm, you know, running 10 minutes late. I'm sweating on the train. I feel like I can't do anything, right? I just got in a fight with my partner, and I'm just trying to figure out how to check in with myself. My options are those more clinical solutions. I have to kind of understand a little bit more about the problem I might have, or, you know, kind of more of these like crunchy, esoteric wellness solutions, right? This idea of, you know, maybe meditating for 30 minutes or going on a yoga retreat or green juicing for, you know, 2 weeks in a row, like this really beautiful idea of wellness that is very homogenous and very expensive. And so where do we find ourselves in that landscape? We certainly didn't see ourselves in that landscape. And so that is why we have been so successful to date. Like one of our first taglines, I think, was we're going through it with you. Mm-hmm. And I remember a mentor of mine saying like, I don't know, maybe you should change that. You know, maybe you should make it more like we are the experts. Mm-hmm. And the truth is we're not. We're the experts in our community. We're the experts in millennials. We're the experts certainly in this newer trend of self-care and our approach, which is rooted in acceptance commitment therapy. But in terms of having it all figured out, we just simply don't. And I think that's a huge part of why we've been successful. We're building a brand around that. We're not building a brand around being the expert.
If someone has in your community has a serious mental health issue, there's something, they're saying something that might be, you might want to escalate to a professional, what do you do? What's your process?
We have systems set up to manage for crisis situations. And so one is that we have tagging and can identify any more serious words. And that then we reference that user to crisis text line, which is a 24/7 text support. What is surprising for a lot of people is that we don't get a lot of those issues. It's I think maybe just a handful in our
it's under 0.1%
years or 3.5 years of existing. Yeah. And so a big part of that is we're very explicit about what we're for, in that we're helping to prevent either someone getting to that crisis situation or being more empowered through tools if they do deal with a crisis because of their what they've learned through SHINE, but being very explicit that there are so many really important systems set up for professional crisis support, and we want to make sure people get the best experience and the most impactful experience.
What recommendations do you have for women who want to start a business with a friend?
Two pieces of advice. The first is making sure that you have prototyped or tested out in some way as much as possible what it would be like to work together. So obviously we were really lucky because we work together. But if your friends that maybe just feel really passionate about a specific issue, is it working really early on Sundays? That can be a tough thing to do. Is that something that you all are excited to do together? Does one person feel like they don't want to show up? Just testing out the day-to-day of what it will take, as much as you can know, to really sacrifice and show up in a very meaningful, consistent way around something hard. The other thing I would say is talk openly about narratives. There's so much workshopping that happens in a really healthy partnership, like any relationship, but it's particularly important when the success of the company is based on you all knowing each other in a really deep way and having that dynamic.
How do you resolve the disputes?
There is no major, you know, blow up or dispute where it feels unsolvable. I think the idea of certainly in the beginning, we learned that workshopping was necessary because we're all just trying to do our best, trying to be perfect, trying to be buttoned up, staying in our own lane. One relationship model that we really like is called 100-100. So a lot of times relationships, we think of them as 50-50, right? And that's just not the case. You have to go 100-100 and meet the other person where they are. So a 50-50 relationship is, hey, did you get that report done? And someone, you know, might be flustered or tired or stressed, and they give you a response you didn't expect or you didn't want. And then you go off into your own head and say, like, oh, maybe it's me. Did I do something wrong? Or, oh, she's really off her game. What's up with her? But 100-100 is saying, like, hey, I noticed that, you know, that report isn't done. Like, how can I help? What can I do? Or, hey, I started a draft in case you didn't have a chance. I know that you had drop off this morning. Like, here's a draft of that report. So 100-100 is meeting people fully where they are and then meeting you fully where you are, so nothing can drop, right? Assuming that we're going to be off, people are going to have off days and months and moments. How can you meet people where they are and really pick up that slack for each other?
This is amazing. Such a great conversation, ladies.
If you'd like to hear more of Secrets of Wealthy Women, you can find us on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your favorite audio provider. If you like us, subscribe, share us on social media, and give us a review. I'm Veronica Dagger. Thank you for listening.